are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars. Joining me now, we've got Jeremy Andrus, president and CEO at Traeger Wood Fired Grills. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
All the way from Salt Lake City, just zipping through LA for
you
the day.
Here with you guys today.
I love it. So tell us about your business.
So Traeger Grills is a 30-year-old brand. And it is the best consumer product that no one's ever heard of. And it's a really, really simple solution that makes people really happy. It's a barbecue grill for your backyard that uses all natural hardwood pellets as the fuel and the flavor source. And you use it to bake pizzas, do pulled pork, cook your steaks, your veggies. And What is remarkable about Traeger is that people that have it consistently say, my Traeger changed my life.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a big statement.
A grill in your backyard. Grilling. Who would have thunk, right?
Yeah. So cool. Okay. So this company, like you said, has been around for 30 plus years, yep. But you acquired it when?
Acquired it about 3.5 years ago.
So what made you want to get into this business?
You know what? Having spent my career in consumer products and hard goods, one of the things that I've realized as an entrepreneur is that it's hard to create magic. And so in my years at Skullcandy, we figured out how to create magic, and it grew like crazy to 80 countries around the world. But as I look back, I realize that that process is, it's not perfect. It's not entirely predictable. And I found this little business in Oregon, and what I heard from Traeger owners just blew my mind. I mean, literally, they would say, this is the best thing I've ever owned. They would say, it has changed my life. And so when I found that, I said, the magic has been created. Now we've got to scale it.
So it's kind of like looking for the magic is your
Absolutely.
Piece of advice when it comes to really growing a business. So how do you identify the magic?
You know, from a consumer's perspective, I think it's a couple of things. First of all, you know, we interact with hundreds of brands every day. And the reality is that most brands fit a need, but they don't do that much for a consumer. And so if you can create something that is highly satisfying, in a way that is incredibly differentiated from other things out there, you've got a winner. And I think being different and being disruptive as an entrepreneur is everything. If you're trying to sell something that looks like every other widget or product or service on the market, it's just hard to win.
So is that just luck coming upon an idea, or is that something that you can conjure up in your mind, this disruptive product or service or whatever it is as an entrepreneur that you're aiming to create?
You know, I think great entrepreneurs learn to see the world through a different set of lenses. And so if you ever ask a customer what they're looking for, they'll tell you something, but they won't really understand what they need. And so oftentimes I think it requires knowing your customer really, really well, better than any of your competitors, observing how they behave, and then creating a solution that actually identifies a problem for them. And so you create a solution, and if it's great and it's just disruptive, a consumer says, oh my gosh, I never would have guessed this, but this is the best thing now. Got to really understand your consumers to disrupt them.
Yeah, great advice. And obviously, this isn't your first rodeo. Like right. You mentioned, yep. alluded to, yep. you helped build Skullcandy, which became wildly successful. And so tell us a little bit about that journey. Let's start at the very
sure.
beginning
sure.
when you became one of the co-founders.
Well, you know, I was living in San Francisco, and I'm riding the bus into the office of the financial district and not loving what I was doing there. And one of the and so I'm always observing trends. And one of the trends I observed in 2003 was these white cables that connected to this novel product called an iPod. And that was a big deal then. There was no portable music. There was the Sony Walkman back
in
the day.
I totally remember when I saw my first iPod. I was like, whoa.
It was amazing.
Yeah.
And so I would see one of these flowing white cables, and then they would multiply. And, you know, a year into it, half the people on the bus would have an iPod.
Yeah.
And so I had that experience, and I was out snowboarding in Park City, Utah for a weekend. And I met a guy that was integrating audio and mobile phone technology into snowboarding helmets. And that was the beginning. It was about portable music in snowboarding gear on the mountain.
And that's where the idea.
That's where it started. Yeah. And of course, you know, I think you learn as an entrepreneur, you start with vision, you see a need and you start with vision, but being opportunistic around where it can take you is really important. And so we thought we're going to be an integrated audio company. You know, we were integrating audio into snowboard helmets and into the straps of backpacks with speakers and subs, into sneaker bags, things like that. And what we decided is that what Skullcandy really needed to do was build a headphone brand that appealed to this sort of this young mid-teen consumer that just didn't find any other brand that fit his needs.
Interesting. Okay, so you had the idea, but the idea is just the beginning. What were some of those first steps to making this idea a reality?
Well, you know, I think first of all, you spend a lot of time with consumers, and at Skullcandy, we were a big believer that great ideas weren't found sitting behind a desk. So we spent time on chairlifts on the mountain with our consumers, and just really understanding them and observing them in habitat. And then we started to develop product, and it's a very iterative process, especially when you haven't spent time in China before. So we'd concept a China, we'd concept a product, we'd trade it back and forth with agents in China, we'd fly over there, we'd walk trade shows, and you slowly figure these things out. I mean, there are a million books and case studies on how to build a product, how to take a product to market, but the reality is that you, as an entrepreneur, you figure it out. You just start pounding the pavement and you learn some of the hard lessons, but it's just the best way to learn and to figure out a better way to do it.
And then you grew the revenue in that company to what,
300 million sales,
wow.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yes. So I'm sure there was a lot to that, but give us a few little nuggets on what it takes to scale a business that much.
So I think what you find when a business starts to grow is that your pain points move. And so, you know, early on the pain point was we didn't know where to build the product. And so we go over to China and we start taking buses around southern China, talking to factories. And then you find a place to build it and you realize you got to finance it. You got to raise money. And it's a totally different thing. And then once you've raised money and you finance it, you have to figure out how to sell it and how to build a brand. And so I think what happens is entrepreneurs start with a great vision and then they figure out how to execute it by building a team. And there are a million things that happen in the process, but if you can connect a great vision and learn the art of building a team, that's ultimately how you scale a business.
So then, of course, I have to ask you, what's the art to building a great team?
You know, I wish it was more scientific, yeah. but I think a couple of things happen. The first is that you start to learn how you build an organization. What are the functions that you need? What is the process for putting it together? But the intangible, and I think where you really win, is in how you select people. You know, because I think you learn this quality, and it is a learned quality, and it's a little bit of an instinct as well, which is finding winning characteristics in people. And if you hire people that figure out how to go through a brick wall to get something done, and you put all of the right people together, that is the magic of scaling a business. And honestly, it's like over time, I've just gotten better at it. Over time, you start to recognize these winning characteristics in people.
Well, and of course, that's the challenge is when you're hiring people, you have such little exposure to them. So recognizing those characteristics can be tricky. You obviously have gotten better at it. So how have you gotten better at identifying these characteristics?
So part of it is that I think there are really a couple of things. One is that you learn how to ask the right questions. You get really, really clear on what this person needs to do for your company, and you get really prepared on the questions that you ask that person. And by the way, it's like every resume looks good, and so I don't hire based on resume. In fact, you know what I focus a lot more than sort of resume attributes are cultural attributes, because I really think, you know, every company can find good people, but the secret sauce on a team is creating culture that helps people not only make decisions, but it inspires them to be their best selves. So that's the one piece. Like, be super prepared and focus on culture more than anything. And actually, I think it starts with figuring out what your own value system is. And so we defined our values very, very clearly, and we connected the vision of the business with the cultural values that we wanted people to live by. And the cynical side of me has learned that people don't change that much. Like, we are who we are. And so as an entrepreneur, if you can screen for those values and bring the right people in the door, you don't need people to change.
All such good stuff. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about business school, whether it's necessary, whether it's not, all that good stuff. We are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Have you heard about Newsmax TV? It's America's fastest growing cable news channel in 70 million homes. Every minute, every day, watch Newsmax for breaking news on President Trump. Plus, get insights from Bill O'Reilly, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, Mike Reagan, and more. You can find Newsmax TV on DirecTV, Xfinity, Dish, Optimum, Spectrum, Fios, UVerse, Suddenlink, Wow, and dozens of cable systems. So check your guide now and watch Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
I'm pretty handy around the house, but now that I have kids, I don't want to spend my Saturday installing a toilet or fixing an air conditioner. But thankfully, there's HomeAdvisor. HomeAdvisor helps me find the best home pros in my area to handle any kind of project. You can read reviews of the pros, check their availability, and even book appointments online. And what my wife loves most is that HomeAdvisor is completely free to use.
Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started. HomeAdvisor.
We are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. Welcome to Business Rockstars. We are continuing our conversation with the president and CEO of Traeger Grills. Now, I mentioned we're going to talk about business school, which we will get to in a second. But first, I want to talk about when you first acquired Traeger Grills. Within 6 months, you figured out, whoa, we've got a problem here.
We have some issues.
And it really meant starting over and basically letting go the majority of the employees that were already employed place. So tell me about that time.
Well, you know, it was a hard part of my career. It wasn't what I thought I was signing up for. And I had this realization as I got on the inside and started to really try to build the values within the business and redirect it towards a different vision. I realized that a lot of people weren't really on the team. It was a job. There was infighting. There was a culture that wasn't conducive of sort of creating this aspirational desire to build something great. And I got 6 months into it and I had a day where I just said, this isn't working. This team, like there's just so many bodies buried behind the walls of this old business, as small as it was, and decided I had to start over. And so created a careful plan to really sequence rebuilding the team. And we let 90% of the people go and relocated the business to Utah and effectively started over with people that I knew.
And that would be a lot of entrepreneurs' worst nightmare, because when, as an entrepreneur, you want to move forward, but that feels like taking steps back. But sometimes that's necessary.
You have to rebuild.
To go forward.
You know, one of the hardest lessons I learned, and actually I learned it at Skull Candy early on. I remember hiring someone who on paper was fantastic. And from a skill set perspective was very good, but culturally he wasn't good for the business. And I was able to rationalize, we need this guy, he's good. I don't want to have to go out and rehire this position. And ultimately I look back and I realize it was a mistake, because culturally he was toxic in the business. And I think as an entrepreneur, learning that the glue that holds your business together is the culture and it's the people. And don't ever sacrifice that. Be willing to make hard decisions around people for the greater good of the team.
So you believe in the whole fire fast motto?
Absolutely. You know what? I realize that when you sit around, you're talking about someone and saying, this person's not working out. He or she is this or that. They're not, eventually you realize that you're just wasting your time, because you never stop talking about that person. And so if there's someone that just isn't working, you just acknowledge that you don't get it right every time. And it's more art than science. make a move quickly.
Yeah. So let's go back to what we were talking about earlier with consumer products and how they really have to have that magic, that it factor, if you will. Yeah. I'm sure everyone's got their own name for it. But how do you relay that to the customer, that this product has magic, even though you haven't tried it yet and you need this?
You know, it's actually one of the hardest things I think you do. When you have something that's disruptive and is meaningful to a consumer, the good news is when you can communicate that to them, it's win.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer.
But the reality is that innovations take a lot of consumer education. And so at Traeger, we've got this solution that we think is going to disrupt outdoor cooking globally. Yeah, the problem is that no one knows what a wood pellet grill is. They just scratch their head and they have no idea. And so we've got 20 different ways that we communicate with our consumers. And so there's no single thing in a marketing plan that allows you to win. You recognize that consumers need a lot of different touch points. And the touch points aren't necessarily just from the company. They're coming from people in their circles of influence, from people who are influential on social media. And so we really think about how do we connect with our consumers in a lot of different ways, but principally in ways that are emotional to them.
Interesting. So let's go back to Skull Candy, because you helped take the company public, mm-hmm. correct? So yep. What was that like?
You know what? Boy, that was a ride. And I got to tell you, until you've tried it, I thought it was a badge of honor. It's something I'd always wanted to do before I did it.
A lot of companies. Yeah, that's the dream.
It sounds amazing until you and it was a great experience. I wouldn't trade that experience. And you know, you go on an IPO roadshow, and you know, for a kid that was used to sitting at the back of the airplane, and suddenly you're on this private airplane, you're traveling around to three cities a day and eating great food.
Wow, glamorous.
Glamorous until you get to the third day and you realize that everybody's asking you the same mindless questions.
Oh, exhausting.
Exhausting. And then you wake up after your roadshow and you realize nothing's really different, except I now answer to a whole bunch of shareholders on Wall Street, you know, to equity analysts and to hedge funds. And you know, it's a great experience and you learn a lot of business discipline. The one thing that I really struggled with around the process of being a public company CEO is that when you're private, you obsess over your customer and their experience with the product at retail, when they open the box, all of the things that matter in business. And when you go public, you start to obsess over your financials and your quarter, and you get really good at storytelling what happened in the business. How do you spin a negative to be a positive? And honestly, to me, that was a mindless activity. I love it so much more, just being a private business and doing what's right for the business.
Yeah, I think it's good as an entrepreneur to know what you want and why you want it, so you can choose the right fit for you.
Totally.
Okay, as promised, we are going to talk about business school.
Yep.
You have your MBA from Harvard, and obviously you don't regret it, love it, but you have an opinion on whether or not it's necessary.
I do. Yeah, you know, like I had a great experience at Harvard Business School. It's a tremendous place. You get a chance to not only learn a lot about leadership and about sort of topics where I had voids that I hadn't studied in the past, but most importantly, you meet really great people. And I love that. In fact, this weekend I was at my 15th Harvard Business School reunion. It was great to reconnect with people. I do think that, and I grew up wanting to go to Harvard. I decided at 14 years old I was going to Harvard Business School.
Oh, cool.
And they disagreed the first time I applied. So I had applied a second time. But I think that you really have to think long and hard about whether or not business school is right for you. What exactly are you trying to learn and to get done at business school? What do you expect to do there that you can't learn as an entrepreneur? Because I tell you that, like my first couple of years at Skull Candy, which was post business school, I learned way more as an entrepreneur than I learned sitting in classes reading case studies. And so I don't begrudge the experience that I had, but the reality is that it's expensive. It's not just financially expensive, but you take 2 years out of your career to do it. And so if you know exactly what you're trying to get done, I recommend it. It's a great experience. But as an entrepreneur, I don't think you have to.
Yeah. And every industry is very different and the background necessary to be successful in that industry. Let's talk about yours in particular, consumer products.
Yep.
Any advice that you would like to offer entrepreneurs for being successful in this field?
You know, as a consumer product entrepreneur, I think it's really important to observe behaviors in consumers. Innovation is ultimately what drives a consumer product. You know, we live in a very competitive world. And so I think figuring out how do you connect a consumer need with a product that really solves a problem that is not even close to anything else out on the market. If that's how your mind thinks, if you walk down the street seeing solutions to problems that consumers don't necessarily even know that they have, you're a consumer product guy.
That's great. I love it. Thank you so much for your
time
and stopping by. Really appreciate
it. Nice to be here,
of
course.
Awesome. We are the biggest entrepreneur destination on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars. I'm joined by AJ Forsyth. He is the co-founder and CEO of iCracked. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And it sounds like you've been an entrepreneur for a while now. Tell me about some of the other businesses that you've owned.
Yeah, absolutely. So it started in college where I needed to make money to pay for tuition. And so the easiest thing we did was like, what are the things we need? We need wine because we love drinking wine.
Obviously.
And then I kept breaking my like smartphones. And so my brother and I ended up starting a winery early on in college and then growing that. It actually got fairly large. And then we ended up selling it back to the other founders. And then I started a beekeeping operation where we just make and sell honey. And bees are actually a really interesting business model because you can make money. I could talk about this for an hour, but you can make money collecting hives from people's backyards, selling the honey, and then renting out the bees to farmers to pollinate. So that was a cool small lifestyle business. And then I kept breaking my own smartphone. And after paying Apple $200 at the time for a repair, I was like, this is crazy. I broke my phone again, ended up taking it apart, fixing it myself. And then I started being known on campus as like this iPhone repairman. And I just meet people in the dorms, fix their device. And what's crazy is it's since grown from one college campus at Cal Poly to we have about 4,000 active technicians in the US right now. We cover about 93% of the US population. So anytime you break your phone, you put in a request at our website and then we'll send someone to you to come fix your device on the spot. It's a really cool service.
That's incredible. So you basically found solutions to your own problems.
100%.
And then it just kind of caught on.
Yes.
Did it feel organic or did it feel like a lot of hard work in the beginning?
Definitely a little bit of both. So I think every business that I've been involved with, it never started out. We never started it to grow a massive company. It was just to solve a
happy
personal
mistake.
Need
yeah.
and generate a little bit of income. And it's actually crazy now that we have about 100 full-time employees and thousands of technicians all over the place.
Yeah, that's incredible. And you work with your brother at the winery and,
yes.
and in some other capacities as well. What is that like working with family?
Oh my, it's actually awesome. So the winery is called Rebel Coast and he's the CEO of that company. So we started that in 2012. I'm pretty removed from it at this point, given how busy I am. But they are the coolest company. They make four different wines. They'll sell a couple hundred thousand bottles this year. And it is just like the funnest group of people. It's like a bunch of best friends working together, making and selling wine. So I'm very proud of them.
Yeah. So now that you've had that experience of working with your brother, would you ever work with family or friends ever again? Or do you?
Yeah, no, I would. So when we started out, we were working out of a basement in Sunnyvale, which is in Silicon Valley. And I remember thinking, like, we don't have the capital to pay real salaries. We weren't paying ourselves real salaries. And so the only people we could work with were close friends that actually believe in what we're building. And so we've definitely made some mistakes in hiring close friends, but then some of my closest friends in the world are my coworkers now. So I don't know what I would do necessarily differently, because you don't have much of an option. You have to go with people that believe in you and are willing to, like, put in blood, sweat, and tears into the company. But I definitely would be more suspect of hiring close friends if I were to redo it again.
Yeah. Well, who would you say is your number one mentor?
Oh, that's a great question. I have so many amazing and influential people in my life. I would say that I'd say probably my dad. So my dad was like, he's a CEO also of a plastics company in Boston. And I think he taught me to be curious. He taught me ethics, drive. But I would definitely say that he was the inspiration to actually make the jump from working summer odd jobs to starting your own business. And I would definitely be thankful for that.
We're here with AJ Forsyth. He is the co-founder and CEO of iCracked, and we're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars. So how would you describe your leadership style?
So that's actually a pretty complex question. So I do not think that I'm a strong manager. And in terms of like coaching and handholding. And so what that actually has led to is I've hired a lot of people that are fairly autonomous and masterful in what they're doing. So you hire people that you don't need to manage, basically, because they manage themselves.
You delegate and let them do their own thing.
Yes. And so I would say that one of my leadership styles is hiring people that are autonomous, can get direction, but not necessarily know the destination, but they'll figure out how to get there. I'd also say that I like really value having fun at work. I think life's too short to ever work in a job that you don't feel like you're put on earth to do that. And like, why work if you're not having fun and do the best work of your life? We also work incredibly, incredibly hard, but I don't think that is unique to us. But we definitely value a good, strong work ethic. And then also, like, we're just passionate we're all people. And don't work with people you love working with, basically.
I feel like the common thing all entrepreneurs have is they're passionate. You have to love what you do in order to want to put in that time and energy, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So do you believe work-life balance is possible?
That's a funny question, because if you're doing what you feel like you're put on earth to do, then there isn't a balance. It's like more of an integration. And so I get to wake up and like I smile I'm excited to go into work every day. And then like sometimes I just want to go home and like curl up in a ball and cry because the day was like so hard. But I wouldn't say that there's a clear like on and off switch, and
it's kind of constantly going on and off.
Yeah, so your focus is
going in different directions regularly.
So I'm very passionate about what we're doing. So we believe that technology should be easy, and so we want to build one of the world's last technical workforces. Where long term, right now we're in smartphone repair and tablet repair, but long term we want to build a company where anywhere on earth you can put in a request and one of our technicians will show up and install your like smart thermostat, smart locks. They'll solve your technology problems. They'll repair your electronics. And so in order, like, that mission's massive. And back to work-life balance, we want to hire people that are passionate about changing the way people care for their devices. So I wouldn't say there's an imbalance. I would say that there's just a deep integration of the two.
Tell me what a typical day looks like for you.
I don't understand how people can work super late. There's some people that, like, I love getting up at like 5 or 6 a.m. getting a couple hours worth of work done before most of the office shows up.
You're more productive in the morning.
Oh my gosh, yes. It's just it, like after too much coffee.
Start to crash.
It's amazing. But I we try to minimize meetings.
Do you go straight to work, go straight to the office, or do you have some kind of morning ritual? Or are you straight on your phone?
So I generally shower. And
showering's a good thing.
I showered before this. So our office is in Redwood City, which is south of San Francisco, and it's on a lagoon. And then I have a house across the lagoon, and so I can actually paddle boat to work.
I love it. Do you actually do that every day?
I do it probably half the time. It's a good little workout.
That's awesome.
But I get to the office, and then I'm inbox zero, so I clear out my inbox every day before I go to sleep and right when I wake up. And then I'm constantly on emails, doing a lot of interviews and trying to like, one of the things, I actually think that if your schedule's 50% full, that's the optimal schedule to have. So you have like free time to go around, talk to people, meet with people, see how you can support them, see how you can help them. So I have a very full schedule, but the best days are ones that when you can kind of just float around the office and drop in on meetings and see what's going on.
Absolutely. And what are three tangible takeaways that an aspiring entrepreneur can take away with them right now?
I would say like watch the product market fit very closely. So I'm reading a book called High Output Management right now by Andy Grove. And it's but the second one is High Output Management is a very tangible thing. It's one of the best management books ever written by the CEO of Intel. And then, In the book, it's all about like, how do you maximize the output of your organization? And a manager is defined by the output of his or her organization under them. And so I would say like, work very hard to leverage your people. Cause when you're an entrepreneur, you can't do everything by yourself and you need to figure out how you can leverage your organization to get done what the company needs to get done.
It's awesome. And going back to how you're telling me about your business plan and how it's had to evolve, how do you know that it's time to evolve? How do you get those cues and really just allow your business to grow organically?
You have these feelings that something has changed in the business and the company needs to fundamentally change to follow that change, but you may not be able to put your finger on exactly what's changed. And so we're going through that right now where we're turning from a nationwide smartphone repair company into a like smart home installation company where you'll be able to press a button and we'll set up your thermostat, smart lock, doorbell, whatever. And if we don't change, then like what happens if there's an unbreakable phone that comes out and we haven't changed as a company? And so I think that you need to constantly be evolving and innovating on your business model.
And paying attention.
And change over time. Yeah, pay very close attention.
What the customers want.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Thank you so much to my guest, AJ Forsyth. He is the co-founder and CEO of iCracked. And we are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
Day in the life. Every day is different. A lot of it is on the road. What's wonderful now is that I get an opportunity to meet so many other female entrepreneurs. Who are equally passionate about their mission. Well, there were 26 FDA-approved medications for men, nothing for women, despite the fact that we'd known about this condition since 1977. So I thought it was time that we got one on the board for women. And you can imagine me showing up, presenting the female Viagra to a room full of male investors, and often the discomfort with that. But in fact, that was exactly why we needed to be having the conversation in the first place. I think there are six choices you make. You have to choose to be an owner all the way through, an owner to the core. Choose to be bold, quirky, because you spend so much time at work, you better have some fun while you're doing it. I think you've always got to choose to be learning. Family, at least in my cultures and my companies, we're a very tight-knit group. And ultimately, you have to be appreciative of the opportunity you have to fundamentally change something for others. So our first project is working on a nail technology that if I dip my finger in the drink, it detects if there is a date rape drug. Basically, it changes color. And there's an example of great engineers come up with an idea that fundamentally changes it for women and puts power at their fingertips, literally, in what can be a powerless situation.
Have you heard about Newsmax TV? It's America's fastest growing cable news channel in 70 million homes. Every minute, every day. Watch Newsmax for breaking news on President Trump. Plus, get insights from Bill O'Reilly, Alan Dershowitz, Pat Buchanan, Mike Reagan, and more. You can find Newsmax TV on DirecTV, Xfinity, Dish, Optimum, Spectrum, Fios, UVerse, Suddenlink, WOW, and dozens of cable systems. So check your guide now and watch Newsmax TV. Real news for real people.
Guess what? Right now is the perfect time to tackle those home projects you've been putting off. So come summertime, you can just sit back and relax. HomeAdvisor can help get you started. HomeAdvisor matches you to the right pro for the job in seconds. You can read reviews and even book appointments online. HomeAdvisor can help with any home project, big or small, painting, plumbing, even remodeling. Find a great pro now before the busy season hits. Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app. HomeAdvisor.
This is Morgan Freeman, executive producer of the documentary film, The C Word. And I'm here to tell you that defeating cancer takes breakthroughs. A breakthrough is the start of something extraordinary. To be breakthrough is to be brave. Many small breakthroughs can lead inevitably to a big breakthrough. The kinds of breakthroughs that advance the fight against cancer. The ones that save lives by the millions. You are the breakthrough. You, the patients taking part in clinical trials. You, the scientists doing next level research to beat cancer. You, the doctors and nurses who tirelessly care for everyone along the way. Let's be the breakthrough.
To learn about screenings and clinical trials that may be right for you, go to standuptocancer.org/breakthrough. Stand Up to Cancer is a program of the Entertainment Industry Foundation. Please talk to your healthcare provider about appropriate screenings and clinical trials that may be right for you.
The legal do's and don'ts when starting a business. I'm Alex Worley, and here to help us answer that question, Len Gray. He's the founding attorney at Gray Legal. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And you learned a lot of these do's and don'ts through experience the hard way. So tell me your story first.
Yeah, I probably learned most of the don'ts that way.
Okay.
So I was an attorney at a large law firm in New York. Did that for several years. Pretty stir crazy. You'll find that those large firms are not the best for the entrepreneurial type. And then I left to, at the time, actually start a beer brewery in my hometown of Memphis.
Cool.
It was the thing I should have done and didn't do. All my friends are still mad at me about it. But after going from there to a couple of other startups, I ultimately started a SaaS platform with a good friend in the legal recruiting space. And we did that for about 5 years, and along the way did just about everything wrong that you could.
Okay. So let's go through some of them. What were the things that you did wrong?
The biggest thing we did wrong to put it simply is we spent way too much money on all the wrong things.
Like what?
The two biggest ones were legal and software development. I should start off by saying he is a lawyer too. And the last thing you want are two lawyers negotiating their own partnership agreement against one another. And so we ended up with this 50-page monstrosity of a partnership agreement that we brought in two other law firms to help us draft.
Wow.
It was pretty ridiculous.
And you were lawyers.
Yeah, it's true. You get into the weeds and frankly, I see it all the time now. It's one of the hardest parts of starting a business when you're doing it with somebody else is how do you value a speculative business piece of it, right? I mean, in your mind, when you start a startup, you're going to become Mark Zuckerberg, right? I mean, that's why you do it. It can be a very thankless job. It's certainly in the beginning, you're not going to make any money doing it. And so you do it with the idea that at some point down the road, you're going to have all the money in the world. And how do you split up a business, which on day one is worth absolutely zero, and really probably has more debts than assets, and then how do you get yourself in a good position for down the road?
And it's obviously a fine balance because on one hand, you need that legal protection. But on the other hand, like you said, you can go too far like you did and spend too much. So where's the balance?
That's a wonderful question.
Please teach us.
Yeah. There are sites out there, obviously, like LegalZoom, and there's a site, Clerky, that can be really great for the right set of founders. Founders who are sophisticated, if they've done it before, if they understand, kind of what they're doing on their own, then you can get a really wonderful product from those sites. I would never say anything bad about any of them. But then there's others who are just starting off that need probably a bit of guidance to make sure that they're adequately protecting themselves, but also to prevent them, to stop them before they go too far and end up with the 50-page partnership agreement that covers things that will never in a million years become an issue.
And the next don't is to not kill your business before it starts, which sounds amazing, but what does it mean?
No, that's exactly right. It relates to what we were just talking about with that partnership agreement. You know, my partner in that startup was one of my very good friends. And by the end of the negotiation, we were about to murder one another. And you see this all the time, that people really, they lose perspective on what it is that they're trying to do. And they start to quibble over things that, again, just don't really matter in the long term. And you're never going to become Mark Zuckerberg if you can't get yourself off the ground.
Yeah. And there's a lot of gray area between your being your friend and your business partner. Right. I can't even imagine how hard that is to navigate and letting there be trust where there needs to be trust, but letting there be legal protection where that's needed too.
Yeah. It's funny, right? And there's no right answer. It just depends on every circumstance being a little bit different, that sometimes best friends can make great business partners, and sometimes best friends should never have anything to do with each other when it comes to business. But a lot of it is, I really believe, is just treating each other fairly and keeping your eye on the prize and don't consider yourself a billionaire before you're there. You'll be there one day.
Okay. So what's the big major do that we need to keep in mind?
The big major do, I think it relates to the two don'ts that we've talked about. It really is, make sure that you're protected adequately. Take the time to get your foundation solid. If you're going to be a venture-backed startup, or if you want to be a venture-backed startup, doing the right things from a formation perspective so that when an investor comes in and does diligence, they know that you know what you're doing. And then beyond that, it's, managing your spend and being really smart and not trying to over-lawyer something. And, one of the things we see all the time, my brethren in the legal community, they can, oftentimes when a client comes asking what they should, or rather telling the attorney what they want, they'll just nod their head and keep, turning the crank on the billable hour. So it's being vigilant and making sure that you're not getting talked into more than what you need. And again, it's a fine balance, but you can get there, and you can get, you can find good pricing now, and you can get, yourself, as I said, have a great foundation, but not have it over lawyered so that you're tearing up your partnership agreement after 12 months and never referring to it again.
Great advice. Thank you so much to my guest, Len Gray, founding attorney at Gray Legal. We are here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Alex Worley, and this is Business Rockstars.
I went straight into the first bubble in Silicon Valley in 1995 when I graduated college. Triggered my interest in venture was this idea that I can work with a bunch of different entrepreneurs at a time and then have capital behind those ideas, and with a portfolio effect, see a bunch of them rise and fail, obviously, along the way. And the trials and tribulations of being an entrepreneur makes it a really fun kind of balance of my interests. I'm spending a lot of time on Instagram right now. Not a publisher, just a consumer. Funniest meeting was way back in the day. It was actually the Italian porn in a box vendor. That was all you could consume porn for, $19.99 with one black box that you plugged in. I think for most of our investment decisions, it's the quality of the entrepreneur that we're backing. I'd say that's 80% of the battle, is just sort of seeing the fire in the eyes of the entrepreneur. Take more chances, travel more, take longer to figure out your life, what you want to do with it. Raise as little capital as possible to hit the relevant milestones that prove your business will work, and be very capital efficient in how you think about capitalizing the company and hitting the milestones.